officially welcome everyone to today's Internet Seminar. My name is Jean Balance, and I'm coming to you from the EPA's Technology, Innovation, and Field Services Division, where I'll be serving as your online moderator. Our session today has been sponsored by the OSWR Center for Program Analysis, and we'll look at an overview of OSWR's Climate Change Adaptation Plan. We'll be joined primarily by Jennifer Brady from the Center for Program Analysis in the Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response. Again, Jennifer is the OSWR's Climate Change Lead in the Center for Program Analysis, where she has worked together with individuals from each OSWR program office and most EPA regions to develop OSWR's draft Climate Change Adaptation Implementation Plan. And although Jennifer will be presenting the materials today, many of the other team members are also going to be available on the lines today to help answer specific questions. Before we begin the technical portion of today's live broadcast, I'm going to cover a couple of basic instructions so that everyone can join us using our online technology. Again, when you signed up for today's webinar, you should have registered online and received a confirmation email that would have contained a complete set of instructions on how you can join us for the live broadcast. That email will ultimately point you to something called the Clue-In Seminar homepage, which has an overview for the session, contact information for the presenter as well as myself, links to download copies of the presentation materials, an option to provide feedback for the live webinar, but for most importantly, a button that says Go to Seminar. If you click that button now, you'll be able to check yourself in online, and you'll be brought into our fully interactive Adobe Connect environment. We'll be using Adobe Connect to host today's live webinar so that you can sit back and listen as well as watch as we deliver our talk remotely through this online environment. Our presenters will be controlling movement through the slides, so if you prefer to take notes, I would encourage you to download a copy of the presentation materials. Again, you can find that on the seminar homepage, and have those available at your own location so that you can page through at your own pace or take your own notes. If you have problems with the online environment, you can, again, download the materials and simply follow along on the phone lines. By default, online audio is available for all participants. You should be able to hear this entire broadcast right through your computer or mobile device. If you have problems with the online audio, the first thing I'd encourage you to do is to check your local volume settings. Sometimes it's just a matter of boosting your speaker output in your sound panel. If that doesn't work, though, I do have toll-free call-in information I'll be more than happy to share with anyone who needs it. Please know if you join us on the phones, we will globally mute all callers, and we ask that you remain globally muted to help cut down on other background noises and disruptions. We will take a break for questions and answers at the end of the technical portion of the broadcast, but you can submit your comments and questions at any time using the Q&A window in the lower right corner of your screen. Again, we encourage participants to type up their questions and comments regarding today's webinar using that Q&A window. There's no need to wait, so you can start typing them up as soon as they occur. And we'll try to get through as many questions as we can in the time we have allotted today. If you're interested in more of the webinars that we offer on the Clue-In website, I'd encourage you all to browse the Clue-In sessions that we have on our archive page. So a brief overview of our online environment. You should see a copy of the presentation materials that are taking up most of the left side of your screen. If you have any problems viewing the content, there is a full screen button that will appear in the upper right corner of that window. If you click that button once, it'll make the slides larger. If you click it a second time, it'll shrink the slides back down. And participants can feel free to go in and out of the full screen view as needed. You'll see the EPA logo in the upper right corner. Below that, a collection of related URLs. I'll call out again, these related URLs will be very important to the focus of today's talk. Again, our speaker will be encouraging you to formally submit comments on the adaptation plan. And in order to do so, you'll need to follow some of the related URLs that you see towards the middle right side of your screen. To open up those websites at any time, you can simply click on the link and press the Browse To button below. And then in the lower right-hand corner, you're going to see a Q&A window where you can privately submit comments, questions, and report technical problems by typing them in the empty box at the very bottom. To submit your comment or question, simply hit Enter or press the cartoon bubble. Once we've gone through all of the presentation materials, we will take a break, and I'll start reading off questions so that our presenters can help answer them. I think that's the end of the technical reminders that I have for today. So again, I'll turn things over to our primary presenter, Jennifer Brady. Jen?
Thanks, Jane. Welcome to everyone, and thank you so much for joining us today to hear a little more about the OSWR Climate Change Adaptation Plan. As Jean said, I'm Jennifer Brady, and I am one of just many, as you'll see here on this slide, that were involved in the formulation of this plan. I'll try to bring this slide back up again, maybe during the questions, if you want to jot down some of these additional names and absorb some of the other folks who were on the group. So to start with, I'm going to give you an overview of why we're holding this webinar, and I think Jean has alluded a little bit to what the intent of this webinar is. I'm going to talk about the plan development process because it's very important, I think, to go over the steps that we went through as we thought through this plan. We're going to discuss the impacts, the climate change impacts, the proposed vulnerabilities, and the criteria for selecting the actions. And these were the ones used in OSRA's plan. And then we're going to discuss the proposed actions from OSRA's plan and open it up to questions and possibly some discussion also. So an overview. This was referenced a bit. This is the OSRA's Climate Adaptation Plan is now available for public comment at the website that's listed, and as Jean said, it's also listed in your side references there to your right. There are 16 other EPA plans that are also available at this website if you haven't visited yet. That includes 10 regions and then, do my math, what, six other program office plans. Those are all at this one website. Comments are going to be accepted on these plans through January 3rd in the Federal Register comment system. And they're all being recorded in the same place. And for that reason, I want to stress here, and I'll repeat it again later, we want to make sure you reference the OSRA plan if you have an OSRA-specific comment when you do go into the regulations.gov system and go into the specific docket. And so we'll know that the comment is about the OSRA plan and not necessarily about all the plans in general. Another reminder, obviously a lot of the regional offices have OSRA-related components in their plans, and you might notice that too. I'm going to talk today about the plan we put together here at headquarters. I'll talk a little bit about the coordination we did with the regions to make sure there was consistency and agreement, but the plan that I'm going to talk about are the actions proposed at headquarters level, but there are several other actions. If you look at the 10 regional plans, you'll see a lot of other actions that are related to a lot of OSRA issues, such as waste management, contaminated sites. So feel free to also kind of peruse all those. And again, a reminder, any comments, we'd like to take as many questions and comments as possible today, but these will not be regarded as formal comments into the system for the plan. So please, if there is a comment you would like to have considered as far as a revision or comment to the plan, please go to the regulations.gov system and enter that comment in before January 3rd so we can consider it and we'll have a record of it as we go forward. So first, a quick overview of the plan development process. For those of you, I know we have a lot of states and tribes on the line. If you've already gone through a process yourself, this should look very similar. This is a pretty standard stepwise process for developing an adaptation plan. The agency developed a plan in June 2012, and from that plan, they directed the regions and the program offices to put together plans that were implementation plans that actually included actions that we would take forward. So we started by identifying a list of vulnerabilities that we felt were relevant to OSRA. Again, this is a very common first step in the development of adaptation plans, is to think about the vulnerabilities. We then developed criteria so we could evaluate those feedback. So all of the actions and vulnerabilities in the plan are technically proposed actions and vulnerabilities. And again, public comment period closes on January 3rd. I think that's about the last time I'll say that. So I'm going to go into more depth in this in the next few slides, so I'm not going to go into that now. First of all, the climate change impacts. This is really the basis that we started thinking about where we had to address issues. We took these climate change impacts from the agency plan. They were identified in the agency plan. It was important that we relied on the best scientifically available data at the time. Fortunately, as part of the agency plan, impacts were identified and literature was identified, likelihood was identified. So we were able to utilize that agency plan and take the ones out that were most relevant to OSRA and then think through these impacts as to how they may create vulnerabilities for us. So the first step, and I would have to say probably where we spent a very large part of our time, was thinking about the vulnerabilities. It's a very critical step in adaptation planning, is properly identifying your vulnerabilities and knowing where your systems are at risk so you can know how to proceed going forward. The work group worked together, really, on the vulnerabilities. It was not necessarily an office-to-office thing because there were a lot of shared vulnerabilities across offices. So in this stage, there was a lot of brainstorming, a lot of iteration, a lot of people putting out suggestions, things they've seen or things they anticipate might happen, and then other offices saying, oh, I've seen that too, and making a list. So that's why it also says unique vulnerabilities, because sometimes they're repeated in different areas of our program because there are shared vulnerabilities. So this is a very important stage in the process and something I think we really took a lot of time considering. We also were as thorough as possible. We recognized that we may not be able to address every vulnerability ultimately, but we wanted to make sure it was in the plan, it was identified, and we recognized what the vulnerabilities were, and maybe some of them that we can't address now, we can come back and address later. But we really wanted to be as transparent as possible about all the possible impacts from climate change to our programs. I put two examples here of broad. These aren't even the exact language of the vulnerabilities. For example, vulnerability is surges in waste from extreme events, and we've definitely seen that. And then we saw many vulnerabilities related to our cleanup remedies and the impacts on our cleanup remedies from extreme climate change. On the right side here, I just have a little snippet of the table you'll find in the report on page six, with all our vulnerabilities that we identified. Also, I just wanted to use this as an example because I'm going to use some of this framework going forward. We wanted to build some structure around how we identified our vulnerabilities, how we identified our action. And so we used the structure we use a lot here in Oz, where preserving land, restoring land, and emergency response are some of our programmatic focuses. So you'll see that here, and you'll see it in a lot of the tables through the document is the organization by these themes. And it really helped us kind of organize our thoughts. And again, you'll see some repetition, though, because there's some things that for preserving land is a similar vulnerability to restoring land. Prioritizing vulnerabilities. So after we had the complete list of what we felt was the complete list of vulnerabilities out, we then realized we had to make decisions on what we could do, which vulnerabilities we could go forward with, which vulnerabilities we could develop actions for. We wanted to make this decision very transparent, but we also wanted to be very considered and thoughtful about it, and we didn't want to just pick what maybe seemed easiest or what seemed the most obvious. So we put together a system of criteria, and those criteria were then rated. And based on those criteria, we were able to look at the vulnerabilities overall, the many vulnerabilities, and decide which ones would be the best and the most ripe for actions at this time. Didn't put a snippet here. This is a rather large scorecard. It's in Appendix B, which is page 27 of the document. Part of the reason that the scorecard is so large is because at this point, unlike the vulnerabilities, where it was more of a group decision and we all thought together of the broad vulnerabilities, each program ranked the vulnerabilities independently and gave them their own scores. So for example, the Superfund program looked at a vulnerability related to remedies, and the Brownfields program looked at a vulnerability related to remedies, and maybe ranked some of the criteria differently. And we represented all those different scores in the scorecard. And those of you who've worked with OSWER know this is because in different ways OSWER is involved in implementing the programs, there's different level of contamination. And so I think you'll see that if you do look through the scorecard, you'll see that reflected in some of those scores, the different ways OSWER implements their program and functions. So the other important thing about this, I think, it's important to do, and I think sometimes it's difficult to do, but not to rank vulnerabilities relative to one another. Not to say this is the most important, this is the least important, but to rather look at each independently and look at the criteria and rank what was true, or I should say score what was true for that vulnerability. This could mean that all your vulnerabilities ranked 10s, or it could mean they all ranked 1s. but it allowed you to honestly look at that one vulnerability versus the criteria and put together a score. And again, I think you'll see that in the scorecard. You'll see, you know, groupings of highs and lows. So then we had the scorecard, and the programs were really able to use this to say, okay, where is the best place to develop actions as we go forward? The next slides are going to review some of those actions. I have many of the actions, but not all of the actions are there. Some of them I've also edited down a little, so please, if there's any of them that you're particularly interested in or concerned about, I encourage you to go into the plan, again, Appendix C, and they're also earlier in the document, and read the complete language that we have there, but we can also answer questions about those. A final point I wanted to talk just to make about this process is we also felt that climate change adaptation was an important issue for OSWR. And so because of that, all along the process, we checked in with the management chain, and we checked in with the directors here, and we let them know what we were doing and the decisions we were making, so they knew that this plan was coming and that this plan was going to have actions and that this was going to be something we were going to be looking at over the next few years. So I think that was very important to really to get that buy-in and really strengthen the plan and make sure it was something that would really be utilized throughout OSWR. So now I'm going to go into the actions, and this is where I think really later some of my work group members can really help me out. First, I'm going to go with the proper management of hazardous and non-hazardous waste. And again, you'll see here the structure of the preserving land category. We have the first one is about permitting programs, but I think I wanted to also point out about the management of waste and debris after natural disasters. I think a lot of us have experienced that and seen that, and so you see there's a couple actions here that the office has identified for moving forward with this, and some of it includes working with other offices such as the Office of Homeland Security and utilizing knowledge from both of these agencies to strengthen this. The last two actions, again, with the structure we have, the last two actions obviously are also emergency response, but they're very much in the proper management of hazardous, non-hazardous waste, so I've included them here in this first slide. Next, we have a preserving land, as you said, and the reducing chemical risks and releases. Here we're talking a lot about preventing contamination from occurring, and we're looking at some of the documents we have and the plans we have, I should say, that help prevent spills and leaks from occurring, and working in the sensitivity that things may change due to climate change. And so we talk about our SPCC program, the FRP plans, and the RMP training. So this is really just kind of preparing, in a lot of ways, the folks who may be working with these plans and facilities. Next, we have the restoring sites, or the restoring land, cleaning up sites. And a lot of the programs in OSWR work in this area, and for that reason I've broken these slides up by our big program offices. So we have Brownfield, Superfund, tanks. So you'll see this the subheadings here that you haven't seen on previous. At the same time, I think this may be somewhere in the future where we can share some knowledge, for example, with remedies. And how those remedies may be impacted. So we may see some flow here of knowledge across in these actions because they do share a similar goal in cleaning up sites and making them safer. The first action we've identified here is from the Brownfields office, and this was actually featured in the President's Climate Plan. So that was a really great thing to see them highlighting using the Brownfields grants to highlight climate change. Superfund, a lot of focus on their remedies and making sure the folks that are working on those remedies know, you know, how the impacts may be, how the impacts may occur in the future. I know they've started looking at this already, and I know they're going to continue to look at this. There's also a focus in Superfund on training and training related to climate change. And so you'll see that as one of their actions. And I should say the last thing is they're also looking at their processes and where climate change, where you may think about adaptation challenges in their processes. Next, again, like I said, the cleaning up sites. We have a lot of our OSRA programs are involved in cleaning up sites. RCRA Corrective Action, a lot of their programs are delegated, so here you see some of the partnerships looking to work with states and tribes to talk about climate change consideration in the RCRA Corrective Action Program. Underground storage tanks also very, very cooperative with their state partners, so they have proposed working with ATSWAMO, which is the Association of State and Territorial Solid Waste Management Officials, to look at some of these issues of climate change. And again, this is reflective of how some of our different programs are implemented. Next is emergency response. Emergency response, we have a couple categories we're looking at. Underground storage tanks identified some actions, and as you can see, some of these actions were based on current experiences, recent experiences with extreme events, and deriving some lessons learned from those experiences. In the emergency response group, they are on a national response team, which has many, many agencies, and a lot of those you'll see are very involved in things that may work with climate change impacts. And they're going to utilize this group to determine if there are any changes that need to be made because of the increased impacts from climate change. OSRA-wide actions. There are several areas where we determined that information needs to be consistent throughout OSRA. And so in that sense, we wanted to make it a central function. We didn't want Superfund to have to find data on sea level rise and tanks to find data on sea level rise and maybe be using different data. So we made an act that is coming out due to climate change. And so that is an OSRA-wide action. I should say it's also an action where we'll be sharing information, hopefully, throughout EPA and finding some consistency across all offices, programs, and regions. Finally, here you'll see training needs. Again, we'd like to identify things that we can train everyone about adaptation, educate about adaptation, recognizing that programs may then, as Superfund did, identify that they want to train their folks on specific modules and specific issues related to climate change. Tribes and vulnerable populations. OSRA acknowledged in our plan, and we know this from the literature and we know this from what we've seen, there will be disproportionate effects on particular communities, demographic groups, and geographic locations. We are interested in working to find ways that OSRA can help with this issue. In our plan, we have proposed providing data and tools to both tribes and vulnerable populations or the communities that serve the vulnerable populations to help them in preparing for climate change. But this is an area where we'll definitely consider other ways that we can assist partners in these areas and someplace that we, you know, may be able to take additional suggestions on actions that are appropriate. A reminder, again, the public comments, any comments we have here, I'd like, you know, I'd encourage you to enter them into the system so we can consider them formally. And I think I'm actually done with my slides. I do have more information available about the vulnerabilities if we'd like to talk about that later, but I'm going to return as we open the discussion, as I said, to the work group here, because I think that's information you may need to if you want to reach out and you're involved in a specific program. So Jean, I think I am ready if there are any questions.
Okay, we do have questions that have been submitted electronically. This will be another reminder for the participants that are on the line. You can type up your comments and questions. If you're in the middle, keep typing them up. If something happens to spawn another thought, you can continue to submit comments and questions as we progress through this discussion. To submit the comments or question, look for the Q&A window that appears in the lower right corner of your screen. There should be an empty box or field at the very bottom that you can click your mouse cursor on and begin typing your comments and questions. No one else will be able to read those comments. We'll keep them hidden to a private queue, and I'll start reading through some of the comments and questions out loud to have them addressed by our panel. For the panel members who are joining us on the phone lines, please remember I did globally mute all of the callers. So if you're one of the panel members or work group members that are going to help answer the questions, you will need to follow these special instructions to unmute your phone so that you can help respond vocally on the phone lines. I'm going to start out with a question that came in from one of our participants that asks if you could define, quote, vulnerabilities again.
Oh, that's a good question. I will give you the formal definition of a vulnerability, and then if we want to, we can elaborate kind of more in an example way. The formal definition of vulnerability is the degree to which a system is susceptible to or unable to cope with adverse effects of climate change, including climate variability and extremes. Further, vulnerability is a function of the character, magnitude, and rate of climate variation to which a system is exposed, its sensitivity, and its adaptive capacity. In more layman speak, a vulnerability is basically, I would say, define it as where you may have a weakness in your system due to, or an issue or a challenge, I'm trying not to use the word vulnerability, due to the impacts of climate change. So where extreme flooding may make your site more prone to risk than it probably was previously. So I'm trying not to use vulnerable to define vulnerable.
Okay, along that same line, another participant wants to know why, quote, 27 vulnerabilities?
That's just the number we arrived at. That's just how many we came to at the end. There may be more, and again, that is something I definitely encourage comment, either today or formal comment about. We tried to identify as many as we could think of, and like I said, that was a lot of groupthink on that, and back and forth and iteration. It just came to 27, so there's nothing magic about that number.
Were there vulnerabilities that were considered but then ultimately not included in the plan?
Not if we thought they were a vulnerability, no. I mean, we did find some. We thought, we're saying the same thing, and they were maybe summarized into one, but we didn't exclude anything because, say, we didn't think we could deal with it or it wasn't important enough, nothing like that. We did include everything we could think of that could possibly happen as a result of these climate change impacts, extreme temperatures, extreme flooding, wildfires. So.
Okay. We have a participant that had a question. I think you had a reference to the Brownfields grants.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our participants wants to know if you were referring to the Brownfields assessment and cleanup grants.
Yes, I was referring to the cleanup grants. If either of my Brownfield folks is there and wants to clarify the language for me, make sure I have the but it is the cleanup grants that we are referring to, and it's in the terms and conditions of the cleanup grants.
Yeah, we did have a clarifying statement from our Brownfields panel.
Okay.
and this comes from Ann Carroll, who just wanted to confirm that it's for the cleanup and revolving loan fund grants. Okay, we have one participant that would like to know if there was any consideration given to promulgating changes in the agency permit policies. For example, with Superfund sites in areas that are vulnerable to sea level rise. And, you know, they would change that policy so that no remedy decisions could be implemented that would leave waste in place.
I think I'm going to take that comment in, and we don't have a action for it in our plan. We do have a lot of actions, as I said, that are focused on remedies and focused on how robust those remedies will be under extreme climate conditions. So I think Carlos, maybe Pashan had some elaboration on that.
Yeah, he did. Carlos, who's joining us remotely, did comment that that type of stuff would be factored into future remedy decisions. So I'm not necessarily sure if there's a formal policy on it, but it certainly would be something that would be considered when they're planning future remedies. Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and continue with some questions. One of our participants would like to know, how did you select your methods for data collection? For example, where did everyone get that mapping information from?
That we're still working on. That is one of our actions going forward, is to collect mapping information and identify a set of data that we feel comfortable using throughout our programs. So that's definitely an action that we are going to pursue going forward. And I think I said, and I should probably reiterate, we really want to work with the rest of EPA and possibly even other federal agencies on the best available data for mapping and really across the spectrum of climate science. So that's an action that we have identified and we definitely need to work on.
Great. We also did have some additional clarification, again, from Carlos Pachon, who wanted to circle back to that idea of how we might change future remedies, keeping this climate change in mind. And Carlos went on to say that we will use existing remedy five-year reviews to consider new vulnerabilities in our existing landfills on site. But that particular answer is applicable to Superfund sites. It doesn't necessarily apply to RCRA landfills. And Elizabeth Freed also wanted to chime in that the current process right now as it stands also allows them to take into consideration the climate adaptation issues as well when they're selecting remedies. So thank you all for those additional supplements. We have a question that wanted to know who was involved in that plan development. So you do have some names here up on the slide. And they're specifically trying to find out, was Region 5 involved in the plan development? Specifically, they're thinking about Great Lakes. Is there a consideration of the Great Lakes in this plan?
You know, I did work with Region 5 somewhat, and we did loop them in. And they, unfortunately, I got them in a little late, and we don't have them on the list here. Great Lakes considerations would be in the Region 5 plan, probably. I'm not going to speak to what's in the Region 5 plan. I think you'll notice the focus of our plan is at kind of a different level geographically. We don't really focus on specific areas or zones of the country. So that's probably covered in the Region 5 plan, I would assume. Like I said, I cannot speak definitively to what's in their plan. I've looked at it, but do not remember all of it.
Okay. We do have a question. Actually, this is more of a clarification. You had a slide up that was talking about incorporating sensitivity for climate change vulnerabilities for SPCC and the FRP inspector training. And we're just wondering if you could kind of circle back to that slide and revisit the concept about training people, because there's a little bit of confusion on how the slide is worded.
Okay. Let me see. Sorry, I'm having my technical difficulties here. I went past it. My apologies.
No problem. I think that's
the one. Yeah. I don't know if Rich is on our work group, if he wants to elaborate on this at all, or if this maybe someplace where we would need to kind of give a more considered comment to be perfectly honest, I don't know the in-depth of how this is going to be carried out, so.
And I know Rich is on the line, and I think that was, he basically just wanted to be sure that the first bullet should say that we are incorporating sensitivity for climate change vulnerabilities to the SPCC and the FRP inspector training. So he really just wanted to be sure that you had sent that message correctly, that it was about training our people. But
okay,
a little bit
I probably, this is somewhere where it got truncated somewhat.
Right,
yeah.
Right, exactly. Okay.
Thank you for catching the edit.
Let's go ahead and keep on with the questions here. Remember, participants, you can continue to submit them using that Q&A box in the lower right corner. We will continue to go through as many questions and comments as we can in the time that we have. We do have a question that came in and wanted to know how this particular initiative relates to the Oswer Greener Cleanups work.
I think there's a lot of interplay and a lot of places where it can complement each other. I know Carlos, who is on our work group, is the lead on the Greener Cleanups, and I don't know if he has anything to say beyond that, but I think there are definitely a lot of places where this work can complement that work, and that work will feed into this work.
Yeah, I know Carlos is actually listening to us remotely, so we'll see if he has a moment to type up a clarification. The beauty of this technology that participants can join us from almost anywhere. Yeah. And speaking of it, Carlos has chimed in and just wanted to clarify that when we're looking at green remediation, that tends to focus on the footprint reduction for a particular site. So we're talking about greenhouse gas reduction as you look at the whole remedy that's applied at a site. But the as you had kind of highlighted, that the climate adaptation plan really goes much further than just greenhouse gas reduction.
Right. And that's when you get into that. I didn't even speak the word mitigation, but often in climate change you speak about the two sides, the mitigation and the adaptation. And as Carlos said, a lot of the green remediation deals with mitigation of greenhouse gases and not the adaptation.
Excellent. We have one of the participants that wants to know, is the commenting open to anyone? Can an EPA employee comment? States, tribes, private citizens, who exactly can comment on this plan?
To the best of my knowledge, it is open to anyone. I have to admit, I never thought about an EPA person commenting, so I'm not quite sure what the protocol is for that. I know it is definitely open to states, tribes, and the public. I'm sorry, I had really thought of the EPA component of it.
Okay, excellent. And then another participant would like to know if you could circle back. When is the last date to submit comments?
That's January 3rd.
Okay.
Maybe I'll go back.
And then exactly what will happen with the comments? Will the comments be published anywhere? Will there be a formal response to comments? Or are they simply going to be brought in internally and evaluated?
We will be reviewing all the comments, and then I'm not sure if they'll all be published, to be perfectly honest. They're all going to be handled together, as I said, for all the different plans, and then we will be dealing with the OSRA-specific comments. So my apologies again for not being as aware of the comment procedures here.
Okay. We did have Ann Carroll, who's also on that work team, commented just if we do have an EPA staff member who's learning about this plan and wants to become more actively engaged, so for example in next steps beyond just providing comments, could they join the team? Should they be contacting some of the work group members that you mentioned? If somebody on EPA wants to become more engaged in this plan, what could they do?
I think a good thing would be to contact a work group member, particularly if you're in a certain program, someone you work with. That would be a good place to start. And then, obviously, we have a lot of actions identified, and so we're going to have a lot of work going forward. And so I'm sure we're going to continue to discuss climate change adaptation into the coming year. So I think that would be the good first step, is to get in contact with a work group member. And we're going to have a group going forward to really implement this plan, and so maybe they would be interested in becoming part of that.
Okay, great. One of our participants would like to know, how does this plan relate to the current efforts under Executive Order 13650 on chemical facility safety and security?
We actually, I think this was finished prior to the issuance of that executive order. So it wasn't part of the process or consideration of the process.
Okay. One of our other questions, how often will this plan be updated? Is this going to be considered a living document?
It is a living document. We don't have an exact time frame on when we'll be updating it. And part of that was because of consideration of how quickly and how dynamic the climate science is. I think a lot of the folks listening are interested in climate change, and they know that there's new data and new information coming out all the time. So we decided to definitely declare it a living document, but not necessarily put a time frame on the updates, and just kind of take a gauge of the information coming in, going back to things like when we were talking about mapping data and things like that, and then decide from that when we need to move forward and revisit.
Great. We did have one member who clarified that the Great Lakes were actually touched on in the Region 2 plan, specifically because of the border on New York State. So they believe that it's likely that other regional plans bordering on the lakes may also cover these specific issues.
I would be surprised if they didn't, yeah, definitely.
And then one of our participants wants to know, how will the impact of this plan be measured?
That is something that we have kind of set out, framed, but we still need to, I would say, flesh out and frame more fully how we're going to measure the impacts and the outcomes from this plan. But it is something we've kind of put a placeholder down for that we will look at as we go forward.
Okay. One of our participants wants to know if there is an international component. For example, again, we seem to be circling back to the concept of the Great Lakes a lot. And so not only do the Great Lakes border several of the U.S. regions here for EPA, but it also shares a border with Canada.
I don't think we have a direct international component. We have no direct reference to any international component in our work. Not to say I'm not sure if any of them could thinking of some of the disaster plans and things like that. But we don't have a direct international component in our plan, though.
Okay. One of our participants would like to know how they will actually know if their comments were received. Doesn't seem like they're familiar with the regulations.gov site, so they're not quite sure exactly what the process entails if they want to comment that way.
The system will record your comment. We will not be kind of responding. It's all within that internal kind of online system.
Okay. Again, just a call to the remaining participants. We did have about 65 individuals who hopped online with us today. So if you have any additional comments or questions, the floor is still open. You can submit them using the Q&A box in the lower right corner of your screen. Remember, you can click your cursor on that empty white box at the very bottom to type up your comments and questions. You can also copy and paste into that box and either click enter or press the cartoon bubble to the right. We'll continue to hold and let a few additional questions accumulate. While we're waiting for some additional questions to come into the queue, I do know some of the team members were on the line and were having problems with their mute buttons and then the unmuting commands. But I think some of you were able to figure out how to unmute. I just didn't know, Jen, perhaps if you wanted to invite some of your work group members, if they wanted to open up and take themselves off of mute and share some of their thoughts on the plan.
They're definitely welcome to elaborate on any of their actions, because they did develop the actions within their office, and it really was an effort by each office to think about how their programs were affected. So as Rich did, if any of them would like to elaborate on any of their actions or anything they find in their proposed actions that it's particularly important to them to highlight, I definitely welcome them to open up and speak about those actions.
So I know Elizabeth Freed had mentioned she was on the line, and we think we figured out what the meeting issue was. Or Ann Carroll, if you're on the line. I think Carlos is listening remotely during travel, so I know he's typing up replies to me. But again, if any of the team members are able to follow the instructions to unmute, you can certainly talk directly on the phone lines, and feel free. Oh, Carlos has said he has no additional comments, but he thanks for the opportunity to share. We did get another question online from one of our participants, and I'm going to read this one out. It's a couple lines long. One of our participants states that the proposed OSWER actions focus on further consultations with various stakeholders, but wouldn't public confidence in the agency adaptation plan be better served by advocating specific positions that would remove managed waste from the vulnerable areas?
I think it is a rather long, and I think that's a very good one to make as a formal comment. But just to speak to the consultation, a lot of that consultation as far as talking about working with state partners and tribal partners is because that's kind of how OSWER functions. A lot of those functions are performed together with or delegated to the state or tribal function. And so that's why you'll see that in the RCRA language a lot. You'll see that with the tanks, the underground storage tanks. But I think the longer comment would be a very good comment to submit to the system, but I think that's why you see that partnership. It's really more about how our program is run and how these, really ultimately all our actions are taken, and they're taken in partnership with states and tribes in many cases, and not necessarily originate out of our headquarters office here or even out of the regional offices. And Jean, I just want to add, I had some helpful clarification here on the comment process. We will receive, we'll review the comments, prepare a response to the comments we did receive. I think the only question we have is whether or not, because they're all being collected together, if they will then be kind of presented together as kind of all agency, all region comments, or if it'll be, you know, OSWER comments and Region 10 comments. And it probably also depends on the character of the comments, because I'm sure some of them will correspond to many different plans or many different regions. So just a little bit of clarification there. And it'll follow a fairly consistent comment process that we use for all our documents that go out on the Federal Register notice.
Okay. We did have, again, one of your other team members, Carlos Pichon, who is a coworker of mine, actually had a further clarification statement. He just wanted to mention that in Superfund, the consultation process does exist. And going forward, it will use those channels to ask questions on the climate change vulnerabilities. So the vulnerabilities in consultation will continue to be implemented and used here in the Superfund program side.
Yeah, I think, our partnerships are very, very important, and they really are a key to us getting our work done. So it's going to be in the plan. I think it's not surprising that you see it quite a bit in the plan.
We did have a question, and I think I know the answer to this one, but one of the participants wants to know if you're going to actually host a webinar like this to explore some of the comments for further comments.
I will think about that. I hadn't really thought that far ahead of time, actually. I think we'll wait to see what we get in as comments and, how we want to go forward. So.
Okay. Again, we'll try one more call for questions or comments. You can submit them now in the Q&A window. I'll also draw your attention. I've been sharing some additional materials in the Q&A window. So if you're looking, if you haven't read the draft climate change adaptation plan, it's online. We shared that URL with everyone in the Q&A window. We also shared the direct URL on the regulations.gov site where you can actually submit your formal comments on the plan online as well. But let's just wait a few more moments to see if there are any other comments or questions that are coming into the audience. And remember, While we do have an option to share feedback for the live webinar today, that's just feedback about this online event. It's not necessarily feedback for the actual plan. All formal comments need to be submitted through the regulations.gov site. So,
and Jean, just to circle back, as you said, this is because there's definitely we've heard some interest in maybe some of the regional plans. It's the same website. All the plans are there. So if you are interested, for example, in the Great Lakes aspects or some other region, all the plans are at that site. Office of Water Plan is there. Office of Air Plan there. So you can go to that website that's provided, and you can download all the plans.
Actually, someone would like to know if the plan is in Spanish.
Oh, my goodness. No, the plan is not in Spanish.
If one were to want the plan to be made available in Spanish, would they reach out to you or include that as a comment on the plan?
I think that would be a comment for the plan.
Okay. Okay. All right. Yes. Ann Carroll definitely said that would be a comment to include, that it should be published in whichever languages you feel is appropriate. So. And Carlos is responding as well in Spanish that, yes, we should put that in as a comment.
Yeah, maybe we'll make Carlos do the translation.
Indeed. Indeed. Okay, well, again, I'm waiting just one more moment or so to see if we have any other questions or comments. As I said, you will find the URL for the EPA Climate Adaptation Plan. It is in the Q&A box. It will also be available off of the seminar homepage as a resource or link that you can pull up at any time. And remember, you will follow the regulations.gov website, and you can search for the OSPR Climate Change Plan and provide your comments online there. I just out of curiosity, have you actually done a comment submission yourself, Jen? Have you filled out a form online to see what the process is like?
I haven't. As it may be obvious, I have not done that.
Okay. I myself have not used that tool either, so I think I might actually jump on and try to share comments using this for the first time.
That may also answer the question of whether or not EPAers can. I guess we're public citizens, too, though.
Right. So. I think that there is a lot of questions sometime about what role we can play and where do we step over the professional line. So. Well, I wanted to
thank my work group members and let all the folks listening know, especially some of the technical questions that maybe have been raised that I wasn't able to answer with as much clarity, and if you do submit those, because it really was a group effort, and there really were a lot of different issues that were very technical in nature, and that's why we thought it was really important to have someone from Superfund, someone from Brownfield, someone from Underground Storage Tank, so to really understand those issues and really give it an in-depth thought. So I encourage you in your comments, if you want to talk about a specific issue, and we do have folks who can really speak to that with a great knowledge and expertise, probably more so than me, but definitely more so than me.
Excellent. Again, I don't see any other questions or comments that are coming in, so why don't we start some of our closeout procedures, and let's circle back to that process one more time, how they can find the plan, how they can submit their comments, and when those comments are due.
The plans are at the EPA. They're within EPA.gov. You can actually, if you Google, which is, I think, about how we most people go, if you Google EPA adaptation implementation plans, it'll be your first hit, and you can get all of the plans there. And then at regulations.gov, the one key is to the docket number, and you can search, and you can submit your comments by January 3rd, please. That's when it'll the Federal Register notice will be closing. So that's about a month from now. About a month.
Excellent. Jen, any other final statements or comments that you'd like to make before I walk everybody through our closeout procedures here?
No, I thank everyone for their participation. And again, please feel free to follow up either in formal comments or you have all the work group members here as well as my name if there are any other clarification issues that I wasn't able to answer for you at this time during this webinar.
All right. Well, thank you so very much. I'll echo your thanks for everyone. I'm going to walk us through some of the final closeout procedures here and just sort of remind everyone, if they'd like to download a copy of the presentation materials, you will find it on the resources or links area for today's seminar. If you would like to share your thoughts about this particular webinar delivery, there is an online feedback form. I do read each and every one of those submissions, and we really do appreciate and count upon public input on our internet seminars to continue to improve and ensure that we can offer free sessions like this. So again, if you'd like to share feedback, there is a URL. When you fill that form out, there is an option you can check a box to have a confirmation email sent to you for your own records. So if you're tracking your online webinar participation for any other records, you can have that confirmation email sent to you. Just be sure to check your email address and make sure that's entered in correctly. If you shared the line with multiple participants, each individual can actually hop on and fill out their own feedback form. So if you're replaying the recorded version of this, if this is distributed, you too can still click the links to the feedback form and share your thoughts after the live delivery. But remember, that form is dedicated only to the online event per se, the webcast technology, and the presenters and the content that they presented on. If you actually have formal comments on the focus, which is that adaptation plan, you'll need to follow the links as discussed to the regulations.gov website. I want to thank the over 65 individuals who were able to join us from across the country for today's live broadcast. I hope that you found this to be a valuable expenditure of your time, and that we'll either see
and
you.
Thank you, Jean. I forgot to thank you for your wonderful moderation.
No problem. It's been my pleasure. And hopefully we'll perhaps work with you guys again in the future on a subsequent follow-on webinar on the plan as it moves forward. So thank you all so very much for joining us today.